Blog Talk Radio.
Well, it is another day and would seem to be another step closer to a conflict Korea. There is a lot of stuff going on, but basically Korea is insisting on continuing to test missiles and to do things that the Americans and the Europeans and other folks have asked them not to do. And there may not be an upside to any of this, but the main thing is that we've developed an interaction, a way of interacting and relating right now with North Korea that is very negative. And we're probably not being aided by China. China is undoubtedly out to see what it can get from the situation, but it's not a good setup. I've got a little bit here from Tillerson, Rex Tillerson, on he was the Secretary of State, about what's going on. Let me first, though, play a little bit from the Wall Street Journal from something that came out 2 days ago on the situation with the missiles. Good morning, by the way. It is the 28th of April and 6:08 in the morning here at AM Las Cruces with Kelly. And I hope you had a good night. Here is a little bit from Wall Street Journal on North Korea's missile advancements.
Bigger, faster, more explosive, and harder to stop. Since taking power at the end of 2011, North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un has overseen a rapid acceleration of his country's missile program. It was here, back in the 1960s, when his grandfather, Kim Il-sung, started developing North Korea's missile capability. The program moved forward slowly. But since Kim Jong-un took charge, the country has seen over 50 missile tests, more in just a few years than in the past three decades put together. This propaganda video released in April depicts a missile destroying a US city. It highlights Mr. Kim's goal: produce a missile that can hit the United States mainland with a nuclear warhead. He says that's the only way to guarantee North Korea's security. But just how far has he come? First, there's bigger engines. These pictures, released by North Korean state TV in March, appear to show the supreme leader hugging officers and celebrating what they say was a successful high-thrust engine test. If true, it could help North Korea build a long-range missile. The report matches the description of an engine that the US says North Korea worked on jointly with Iran. Second, solid fuel missiles. In February, North Korea successfully tested a new type of medium-range solid fuel missile. Analysts say this is important because solid fuel missiles are more reliable and can be launched quickly. While it could take an hour to prepare a liquid-fueled missile, a solid-fueled missile would be ready in a few minutes. Third, mobile launchers. In June of last year, North Korea held its first successful test of a missile fired from a Rogue mobile launcher. Then in August, it said it successfully launched a missile from a submarine. These missiles are harder to spot and destroy before launch and give North Korea a so-called second strike capability that allows it to retaliate if its main fixed missile sites are destroyed. It also extends a missile's potential range. Fourth, nuclear warheads. Three of North Korea's five nuclear bomb tests have taken place since Mr. Kim took charge. The power of the underground explosions has grown over time. The yield of the last one was estimated at between 10 and 20 kilotons. To put that in perspective, the bomb dropped on Hiroshima in 1945 was 15 kilotons. Pyongyang also claims that during Mr. Kim's reign, it's been able to make nuclear warheads small enough to put on a long-range missile, although that assertion is hard to verify. While experts debate the details of North Korea's missile advances, there's a general consensus that it's made significant strides under Mr. Kim. He's pledged to test a long-range missile this year, and on April the 15th, North Korea displayed new types of missile containers that suggest it's making progress towards that goal.
So I've got a little bit from Tillerson here, but yesterday had a good show, had a lot of texts and phone calls, and the issue was Julia Brown's termination, and that topic is still open. Today, you can expect a lawsuit. I don't know who she's going to pick up to represent her, but because of the malfeasance of Billy Garrett and of Wayne Hancock, we are now in a situation where someone was terminated without ever having been given a performance review. So I would think a lot of attorneys would be interested in that case. Now, here's a little bit of Secretary Tillerson discussing U.S. strategy in North Korea.
Pyongyang's missiles can now go in any direction, and this is a threat that is now moving out of the region and is becoming global. We were unwilling to negotiate our way to the negotiating table, and I think that's the mistakes of the past.
How long is the U.S. willing to wait?
Well, we've got to see a real change on the part of the posture of the regime in North Korea. Now, how do we see that? Well, we'll wait as long as it takes, as long as the threat is manageable.
Isn't that a version of strategic patience?
We will know it when we see it.
Secretary of State Rex Tillerson at the State Department today talking North Korea as we have some new polls out today. What poses the greatest immediate threat to the U.S.? This tracks with what we're seeing, North Korea at 38%. What will stop North Korea's nuclear weapons program? U.S. military force is the answer that gets 51% of people's vote in this poll. And the other question, U.S. taking military action to stop North Korea's nuclear program. In this poll, registered voters, 53-39. Let's bring in our panel. Tom Rogan, columnist for National Review and contributor to the Washington Examiner. Karen Tumulty, national political...
Well, we'll skip that part of it, but the fact of the matter is that we really don't know what North Korea is going to do because we don't really know how stable their leader is. And because of that, then you can't really predict what the guy's going to do because, you know, if someone's unstable, I mean, you know, by definition, you don't know their decision-making, especially under pressure. Now, here is a Korea expert in commenting on China. And this is from yesterday, Fox News.
On Capitol Hill today with dire warnings about North Korea. It comes as the Air Force test fires an intercontinental ballistic missile, the type of weapon the Pentagon says Pyongyang wants to get its hands on to launch a nuclear attack on the U.S. The Trump administration saying the strategy to deal with that threat is to rely heavily on China's economic leverage.
They say they're serious. They say they understand it's urgent. The question will be sort of how close can we bring our two visions of how much pressure we're willing to impose on the North Korean regime. Is it different from the Obama administration's policy? I think it is, in the sense that it's the number one security challenge that we're facing right now, according to the administration and the president. And so we will be pursuing it in that vein.
Sumi Terry is a former CIA senior North Korea analyst, managing director for Bauer Group Asia, and was director for Korea, Japan, and Oceanic Affairs of the NSC under both President Bush and President Obama. Thank you for bringing your expertise to us.
Thank
Let me ask you, you say that China is very afraid of putting too much pressure on and seeing regime collapse in North Korea. Is that right, and why?
Well, because China always wanted that buffer zone. China does not want unified Korea, U.S.-friendly unified Korea with American soldiers on its border. So it needs to keep North Korea as a buffer. It doesn't want instability on the Korean Peninsula. China always said no war, no instability, and no nukes, and in that order. So that's very important for China.
Yeah. Is there a point at which the regime is too erratic and out of control that it becomes a liability, or not really?
Well, thus far, China's thinking has not changed. But this is exactly what the United States and South Korea is trying to do with China, to make China understand that its own strategic interest is not served by just giving a blank check to the North Korean regime.
That's obvious. We'll take a break here and come back with a little bit more news on North Korea. And 523-1450 to call in 805-61802 text. And we'll be right back. A little bit of Dale Watson from that album that he promised after surviving his brush with Satan that we did. If you weren't listening last Friday, I played a piece of a biography of Dale Watson, this country singer, in which he basically lost his mind after his girlfriend died and found that Satan was pretending to be Jesus and communicating to him and sent him to the Vatican, etc. Interesting. If you look up on Amazon, look up Crazy Again, Dale Watson, you should be able to get I think you can rent the film for like $3.99. For 30 days. We'll be right back. 6:17 a.m. Las Cruces AM 1450, 523-1450, and come back a little more on North Korea.
Oh, the Lord is calling me.
All right. So here is a little bit on the briefing that all senators were asked to come to the White House to discuss the North Korea situation.
I'm encouraged with what we heard about steps that are being taken both to engage our allies around the world and to make this China's problem, because China really is the single largest supporter of the North Korean regime. And without Chinese support, we're not going to be successful in any diplomatic effort to rein them in. I also think it's appropriate that we're taking steps to avoid misunderstandings and miscalculation. And so I was reassured to hear about initiatives the Trump administration is taking to consult and communicate closely with our allies so there isn't a misunderstanding, and to do the same with China. China has vital interests in this region and area, and China is the most vital player in making sure that the world correctly perceives North Korea as a very dangerous, a very unstable regime.
Your confidence level in that as you walk away from this meeting today?
I was encouraged that they chose to brief the entire Senate. And I think, it was a sobering briefing in which it was clear just how much thought and planning is going into preparing military options if called for, and a diplomatic strategy that strikes me as clear-eyed and well proportioned to the threat.
Do you think we're any closer to a military action now as opposed to before you went into the meeting?
Or face the cameras. This
is Senator Coons, by the way.
That I was
I'm trying to remember, I think he's from Connecticut.
Assured that the Trump administration, Secretary Tillerson, and others are consulting all of our allies in the region and China to reduce the likelihood of a miscalculation and misunderstanding. Given the unpredictability of the North Korean regime, though, this is certainly an unsettling situation, and one where we all should take it very seriously and could be concerned about the likelihood of a misunderstanding.
So anyway, I had read that there were eight. I don't know if this is how accurate this is, how up to date it is, but the North Koreans had eight missiles eight nuclear warheads. So part of the concern is those missiles reaching Hawaii, for example. Here's a little bit more on the grave threat that the senators heard about during the White House briefing.
Trump administration is moving swiftly to address the growing nuclear threat from North Korea. In a rare move, the White House invited all 100 U.S. senators to a briefing Wednesday and then announced a tightening of sanctions on the country. Heather Sells has more on the story.
The White House bussed all 100 senators down Pennsylvania Avenue for the rare meeting. The secretaries of state and defense and other top officials briefed the senators on the urgent situation in North Korea.
This is the sort of moment that needs to be above partisanship. And
the military is obviously planning for a number of contingencies, a number of options, as well they should.
The U.S. has moved an anti-missile defense system into place 150 miles south of Seoul in South Korea. Residents there have protested, worried they'll become a target. Admiral Harry Harris defended the move in a House committee hearing Wednesday.
Which will be operational in the coming days and able to better defend South Korea.
The U.S. also announced Wednesday that it is tightening sanctions on North Korea and will step up diplomatic moves to pressure the country to give up its nuclear and missile programs. Although sanctions are the main focus of U.S. strategy, there are signs that the president is considering using military force if all other options fail to disarm the country. So far, North Korea has remained defiant. It has threatened to sink the USS Carl Vinson and is vowed to continue its missile launches.
With every test, Kim Jong-un moves closer to his stated goal of a preemptive nuclear strike capability against American cities.
Hawaii said Harris is clearly vulnerable right now, adding that more may need to be done to protect the island state. Heather Sell, CBN News.
All right, we'll take a break for local news here. And we do have one other card up our sleeve that I want to tell you about for North Korea when we come back. 626 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. 523-1450 and 805-6180 for your text line. We'll be back in just a moment.
To a briefing Wednesday, and then announce.
All right, we have a secret weapon that we should consider unveiling now. And what's the secret weapon against North Korea? None other than the worm, Dennis Rodman. Check it out.
Weirdest encounter. Top of the news in North Korea. The first American to meet Kim Jong-un, not John Kerry or even Jimmy Carter. Nope, it was Dennis Rodman, a.k.a. the worm. They watch basketball. Kim is a big fan, but that was just the beginning. Some ice skating, too, an aquarium visit. Then a long dinner and lots of drinks with one of the world's most mysterious and dangerous men.
I love him. I love the guy. He's awesome. It was amazing how they were so honest.
That about a dictator who presides over prison camps, allows millions to starve, and has threatened to destroy the United States. Amazingly, Rodman now has more first-hand impressions of Kim than any other American.
There is nobody at the CIA who could tell you more personally about Kim Jong-un than Dennis Rodman, and that in itself is scary.
And Dennis Rodman joins us right now. I guess you don't find it scary.
No, it's not scary. It's amazing, man. Wow, man. You know what? It was such a great experience. Me and my, I call him my son, Elkin King, we went there, man, and it wasn't supposed to be like that. It was supposed to be like, just meet the guy and just have a good time.
And it turned into such an event. And I have to ask you first, when you said you love Kim and think he's awesome, were you aware of his threats to destroy the United States and his regime's horrendous record on human rights?
But one thing about that, you know what? I didn't look at all that right there. I understand what he's doing. I don't condone that. I hate the fact that he's doing that. But the fact of it is that, you know what? As a human being, though, he let his guards down. He did one thing to me, been a friend. I didn't talk about that. I understand that.
Do you think you have a responsibility to ask him about it so that you don't be perceived as sort of propping up his regime, his cult of personality?
Well, that's what I think. When you grow up in an environment, especially when your grandpa and your father, the one thing, the kid's only 28 years old.
You called them great leaders. You really believe that?
No, what I saw in that country, and I saw how people respect him and his family. That's what I mean about that.
Aren't
great leaders there.
Huh? Aren't they forced to?
Well, I say no, because I think he's going to change something, because he's just a different view. Because I sat with him for 2 days, and the one thing, he asked me to give Obama something to say and do one thing. He wants Obama to do one thing, call him.
He wants a call from President Obama?
That's right. He told me that. He said, if you can, Dennis, I don't want to do war. He said that to me.
Did you say, why don't you pick up the phone and call President Obama?
No, you know, it's a different story. It's a different story because guess what? The kid's only 28 years old, 28. He's not his dad, not his grandpa. He's 28 years old.
So you think he's different. What did he tell you about America, and what did you learn about him?
Guess what? The one thing I said to him, we talked about it, if you see the clips or whatever, he loves basketball. And I said the same thing I said, Obama loves basketball. Let's start there. If you see the quotes in the papers, he says that. He says that about sports. What do you guys love basketball so much?
So that's one tiny bit of common ground. Did you get any sense from him that he was looking to change the relationship with the United States?
Well, one thing about him, one thing I noticed about him, he's very humble. He's very humble, man. As a kid, he's very humble. He's very strong as a man. He's very strong, but guess what? He don't want war. That's one thing he don't want.
He said in the past that he would destroy the United States.
Well, I just think that. I think that's coming from his father. I think as a young man, he don't want anything.
What else does he know about the United States and President Obama from what you could tell?
Well, I do know a few things here about the visit. Number one, the visit was very, very much was criticized. Number two, in the Daily Mail that I'm going to tell you about when we get back, it is very, very interesting. You'll find out a little bit more about Dennis the Worm Rodman, one of the greatest rebounders in the history of the NBA. He played with Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen in those championship teams. He played in Detroit and has been married to some beautiful actresses. But there's something else you need to know about him. And his trip to North Korea, which may shock even seasoned listeners. 635 Kelly O'Connell AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523 1450. We'll be right back. Maybe an attack of the worm or a defense from the worm is all we need. How about, wait, I have an idea. How about a basketball? What did Obama call that when he had the beer with the cop? A basketball wasn't a forum. I'll think of it. We'll be right back. All right, so a little more about Dennis Rodman. 55 years old, profession wrestler, actor, basketball player, athlete, basketball coach, entertainer. You could also say amateur diplomat. His net worth and salary, negative $1 million, born in 61. And he is one of 47 children, perhaps the oldest. His dad's name, and I'm not making this up, is named Philander with a PH. So you can forgive him a little bit for being a Philanderer. And all right. So there was a problem, though, when he went to Korea. And what was the problem? According to the Daily Mail in 2014, February, Dennis Rodman, quote, got drunk, vomited, and defecated all over a North Korean hotel. The former NBA star checked into rehab after returning from North Korea to the U.S. in January. Unidentified hotel employees told a North Korean publication that Rodman acted like an animal and made a mess in the Pyongyang hotel. I believe, though, that was published in South Korea. Sources said it reflected badly on Kim Jong-un in that he didn't do a thorough screening of Rodman before he arrived. And so that was, there was a lot of vodka that was drunk. Now, there were bottles of vodka that were created for the trip with Kim Jong-un and Rodman etched into the side. And so as soon as he arrived, he was given vodka, which probably didn't help matters, and later led for him to be put into rehab. And now, according to reports, he's sick and broke, but he's still out there. I mean, why don't we have a beer summit? That was a listener texted in. Beer summit. Why don't we have a basketball summit? I mean, could we get together, get some event, the NBA's finest, and it would be like when Ted Williams was drafted into the military. Why don't we draft some of these famous basketball stars and put together a traveling team to go over to North Korea and schmooze a little bit? It's just an idea. But I think this guy loves basketball, and why wouldn't he do something like that if he really doesn't want to get blown to smithereens? Now, you're asking, of course, and I don't blame you, what would war be like with Korea? So I have, the Koreans are threatening to sink our aircraft carrier, which I'm sure if they were able to reach it with a nuclear weapon, which would be kind of a foregone deal. But here is a little clip on what are Trump's options with Korea. And this is this is about a week old.
With North Korea.
Let's hold on. One, I think I hear something else playing. Well, no, from the same clip. Here we go.
The nuclear standoff with North Korea seems like it's reaching a boiling point. President Trump has drawn a red line that the North will not acquire a missile capable of striking the U.S. mainland. But the North is not listening. They've been increasing their missile tests as they try to develop a rocket that can hit an American city. So let's take a look at the options the U.S. has for dealing with North Korea. North Korea is the only country that has tested a nuclear weapon in the 21st century. In fact, it's done it 5 times. After Kim Jong-un became supreme leader in 2011, the North began ramping up the frequency of its missile tests. In response to the growing threat, President Obama ordered the U.S. military to use cyber and electronic strikes to sabotage the North's test launches, just like it had done to Iran's rogue nuclear facilities a few years before. The move worked, according to a recent investigative report by the New York Times. Soon, a large number of the North's military rockets began to explode, veer off course, disintegrate in midair, and plunge into the sea. One medium-range missile failed on 88% of its test launches, far higher than the 13% failure rate of the Soviet-era weapon on which it was based. These security breaches enraged Kim, who ordered the execution of 5 senior officials by a firing squad of anti-aircraft guns. But despite the setbacks, the North says it's almost ready to test its first missile capable of reaching the United States. Even if this is just big talk, one thing is clear. Our military does not currently have the ability to stop the North's nuclear weapons program. After it successfully launched a satellite in 2016, it now may be able to strike targets up to 4,000 miles away. That not only puts South Korea and Japan well in range, but also India, parts of northern Australia, U.S. bases in the Pacific, and even Anchorage. But to hit the American mainland, they'll need to bust out the big boys. U.S. intelligence estimates the North has 6 KN-08s and is developing an upgraded version called the KN-14. Neither has been tested yet, but both could theoretically hit us here in the States. To defend against this type of intercontinental ballistic missile threat, we have a multi-layered, partially land-based missile defense system protecting the U.S. mainland and our allies. But those systems have never been tested in live combat, have had high failure rates when tested so far, and would likely fail against a barrage of more than a handful of missiles. President Obama was so concerned by the situation, he warned President Trump that this was the most urgent problem confronting the United States. So what exactly are Trump's options? Option number one has just been taken. Deploy the THAAD missile defense system to South Korea. The Terminal High Altitude Area Defense gives the Pacific Alliance another layer of protection against ballistic missiles alongside their existing Patriot systems and Aegis-equipped naval destroyers. By placing THAAD so close to the North, the U.S., Korea, and Japan have instantly enhanced their ability to track and respond to missile launches. But China is protesting the move, saying it's common knowledge that the monitoring and early warning radius of THAAD reaches far beyond the Korean Peninsula and compromises China's strategic security. They argue THAAD's deployment could set off an arms race in the region, but this seems hypocritical considering how much China, as the North's lone ally and largest trading partner, has already enabled its erratic behavior. Not to mention China's rapid militarization of the South China Sea. Option two is for Trump to double down on Obama's effort to sabotage North Korea's missile tests. But this strategy could have unintended consequences if it emboldens Russia and China to try and disrupt U.S. launch systems. Option number three is to put more diplomatic pressure on the North through China. This interview from last year offers some insight into how Trump views this approach.
North Korea's nuclear effort is the top threat to the United States. What would you do to deal with that reclusive country?
I would get China to make that guy disappear in one form or another very quickly. And let me tell you, people say,
how do you make him disappear and assassinate him?
Let me just tell you, no. Well, you know, I've heard of worse things, frankly. I mean, this guy's a bad dude. But we have a lot of power over China. Don't underestimate.
Option number four is bold, to put nuclear weapons back in South Korea in hopes that the doctrine of mutually assured destruction would serve as a check against the North. This would probably just provoke the North's weapons pursuit, while suddenly ending the decades-old U.S. policy favoring nuclear disarmament with significant consequences around the world. Lastly, option number five is the most risky and aggressive, preemptively striking the North. President Obama considered this option, but ultimately concluded that accurately targeting the North's constantly moving leadership and weapons would be nearly impossible. The risks of a miss were way too high. Any attack that didn't immediately defeat the regime would be guaranteed to start a war, with horrific consequences for millions of people on the entire peninsula, especially for the South, if China rushed to the North's defense. And even if the regime was defeated, you'd then own the fates of the 25 million North Koreans, many of whom would pour over the borders into China and the South. We'll know sooner rather than later which steps the U.S. government takes in this high-stakes showdown. But I want to know which options you think President Trump should pursue and which ones you think he...
Well, and that is a good question. I mean, which approach? I mean, the only thing that I think that is disheartening or maybe just a little bit scary is we have not seen Trump in a situation where all of the, you know, everything is laid on the table, all the, you know, the stakes are so high. And what I want to know is, what is his commitment to avoiding war without, you know, compromising unacceptably, you know, the United States? Now, 51% of the people polled favor a military response. I think people don't want a war with North Korea. What they'd like to see, I think a lot of people believe we could go in and just kill the leader, but I mean, this is a crazy guy. He undoubtedly has some sort of, you know, once he's out of the game, he must have some kind of a contingency plan that is, that's very ugly. So we'll take our last break here, but we'll come back in just a minute, finish her up.
Yeah, the Lord has called me forth, but I did not hear.
All right, and here's a little local news. Lower Rio Grande sees highest projected water allotment in 7 years. And this is from maybe a week ago, 10 days ago, from KRWG News. And it's a picture of water.
It's the beginning of irrigation season in southern New Mexico. Elephant Butte Irrigation District consultant Phil King is coordinating the delivery of water to farmers down the Rio Grande.
Yesterday morning, we made the initial release into the river from the reservoir, and so that water is working its way down now.
Once released, the surge of water snakes its way south towards Mexico, soaking the dry riverbed on its way to irrigation farmers and municipal users in Hatch, the Mesilla Valley, El Paso, Texas, and Juarez, Mexico.
It's the beginning of this year's surface water irrigation system season, and it is both in a very important part of our economy, but also our culture. This whole valley was settled by irrigated farmers, and they continue to be a major part of the culture and the economy to this day.
Every inch of water that flows down the Rio Grande belongs to someone, but seepage from the river and irrigation farming into the ground is the main source of aquifer recharge. And most New Mexicans get their drinking water from the ground.
The river is the primary source of recharge, probably better than 95% of the recharge to the aquifer system here, the groundwater system. And the groundwater system is what provides all of the drinking water for the city of Las Cruces, Hatch, all the way down Anthony, La Mesa, Sunland Park, Santa Teresa. It's all the groundwater system that those municipalities rely on. And that groundwater originates from the Rio Grande itself.
While water allocations are projected to be higher than at any point since 2010, without ramped up monitoring, coordinated management, and water infrastructure projects, the regional long-term supply isn't necessarily any better off. That's according to New Mexico Water Resources Research Institute Director Sam Fernald. He specializes in river-to-ground water recharge and hydrology. And the problem isn't new. Fennell lamented on the situation in our 2015 documentary, Our Water Future.
On the Southwest, we live in a state of constant scarcity because our demand is always pushing up or exceeding our supply.
According to the annual American Infrastructure Report Card released by the Society of Civil Engineers, New Mexico already needs an estimated $1.1 billion in water infrastructure improvements over the next 20 years. Current funding levels are not sufficient. President Donald Trump's budget proposal could put needed improvements further out of financial reach, with a proposed elimination of the Water and Environment Program, or WEP. WEP offers financing for water projects in communities with populations under 10,000 people. King says Las Cruces has comparable infrastructure and groundwater management challenges, but because they are better equipped to adapt and finance solutions, residents often don't experience water scarcity.
The cities, they unfortunately seem to have the attitude that water comes from the tap and food comes from the supermarket. They don't really tie the the resource that they're consuming to its original synthesis.
Las Cruces recently released a long-term city water plan. King says city growth and regional industrial development threaten a limited water supply. That's because 87% of water is used in the irrigation of agricultural crops.
So a lot of the work that I do in terms of research is trying to figure out how to manage water to support the demands as best we can, but also to find what level of demand can actually be supported.
According to a 2017 Union of Concerned Scientists report, New Mexico is the sixth fastest warming state in the nation. The threat to an already scarce water supply is real, and one King says our region needs to prepare for.
Global warming. All right, I've got a little bit of, I guess, female-oriented comedy. I'm trying to bring on more comedians. It's just a matter of tracking down people that are funny and don't curse, which is not always easy. Here, Fat Pants, Anita Renfro.
So today, students, we are going to talk about fat pants. Fat pants from 5 years ago are now your skinny pants. That's the way it happens, because your fat weight from 5 years ago is now your goal weight. And everybody has fat pants. Even a size 00 supermodel has in her closet, I guarantee you, a pair of two. Size twos for when she eats three crackers and feels a little bloated. She's got it. She's got it. Because our weight fluctuates. Am I right? Girls, it fluctuates. By what we ate, what we drank, the time of the day, the time of the month of the year, the barometric pressure, the stock market, who got eliminated on Dancing with the Stars. It doesn't matter. We fluctuate. We gain a little, you know, we got to have them. There's two kinds of fat pants that you own, I guarantee you. The one size is like this. No jeans for me today, okay? Second pair you own is, I'm so fat I could float in the Macy's parade, okay? We call those extreme fat pants, EFPs, okay? You know you have them. You know you have them. And we keep our fat pants, I do at least, in a plastic container under my bed. The thought of those fat pants under there just waiting to come out and make me pay for not exercising, that's absolutely terrifying. I even write the word fat pants on the plastic container that I keep them in. There's some sort of glory in labeling them. So, like, I can take them out and go, oh, see what I used to wear? See, except when you gain weight. And then you have to put your skinny pants under there. And I always label those pants the dryer shrunk. That's what I label those.
There you go, ladies. A little female comedy. I wonder if there's something genetic about the way men and women do comedy or hear comedy. I'm sure there is. And what kind of comedy does Caitlyn Genital like? All right, so we talked about in the first hour, we talked about basically North Korea and the situation over there. Now, what are the chances that, do you think that we're going to get into a war, or do you think it's going to be a stalemate, a very high-stakes stalemate? Thanks for tuning into the first hour. We will take a break here on the hour and come back. And it's open mic Friday, 523-1450 and 805-6180. And I'd love to get your input on what you think really happened with Ms. Brown, Julia Brown, and her firing. We'll be back. AM Les Cruz is the same, 1450.
Called me fool, but I did not hear. Today was, I was awash in sin, now I'm washed and cleansed. I was lost, hell bound, but now I'm found.
Kelly. Who was that comedian you were playing the other day that was making jokes about water and stuff?
He was making jokes about water?
Yeah, like bottles of water or something like
that.
Why don't we get it from the French or something? I
think it's Jim Gaffigan.
Gaffigan?
Yeah.
Okay, cool, Kelly. Thanks.
Thanks, Tom. All right, so there were a few things that I wanted to put on that I didn't put on over the week. So one of which was a story that I'll tell you about later, this very weird story. You know this guy that is he's Mr. Science. His name's Bill Nye, and he's actually a comedian. I didn't realize, I guess I should have known, didn't realize that he was a mechanical engineer at Boeing, and now he pretends to be a science expert, and he really doesn't have that training. I mean, I don't know what he knows, but the idea that he's a scientist is he's a biologist and he's out fighting for evolution, or he's getting up and leading this movement forward for science, is misleading. And he's got a very weird and some would say probably perverted take on gender and children that I was going to let you hear. But first, let's talk about this border wall and the right, the blogosphere. Right-wing commentators are up in arms about this and demand that Trump build it sooner rather than later. But here's a little bit from Ted Cruz. Make El Chapo pay for it.
Cruz has had a great idea. He wants to build a wall, especially in his state of Texas. Going to need Arizona, New Mexico, and San Diego. But if the funds aren't going to be there, he's got a plan B.
That's right. He is right there on your screen. We're interviewing him this morning because your plan, Senator, is called the El Chapo Act. What is this?
Well, you know, as you know, the Democrats are threatening government shutdown because they're so opposed to building a wall. They're so opposed to finally securing our border. And so I've been trying to think about how can we get this done? How can we build the wall even in the face of Democratic obstruction? And so yesterday I filed the El Chapo Act that provides that if El Chapo is convicted, you know, the famed Mexican drug lord, the estimates are that his criminal fortune is roughly worth about $14 billion.
Wow.
Now, coincidentally, the estimates for the cost to build a wall range from $14 to $20 billion. And so my legislation provides that if those assets are forfeited, those assets from El Chapo will go directly to building a wall and to securing the border.
And that way, if you did that, then Mexico would indirectly wind up building the wall. That's pure genius on your part.
Well, true enough. And you know, look, El Chapo led the Sinaloa drug cartel. And you know, these drug cartels are the ones that are crossing the border. They're smuggling narcotics. They're engaged in human trafficking. They're engaged in murder and extortion and are violent criminals. And there is a sense of justice, a sense of this is what's right, mm-hmm. to say the people who are violating the border like crazy, we should use their ill-gotten gains to finally build the wall and to finally ensure we have the assets to secure our border.
How can you secure his assets? I mean, does he have this like in a bank account, $14 billion?
They are scattered worldwide, but the government right now has extradited El Chapo from Mexico, is proceeding with a criminal prosecution. The first step is to convict him. Once convicted, the government is seeking the forfeiture of $14 billion, and the government will go and prove where the assets are and go forward with forfeiture following a conviction. And ordinarily, that money goes to the Treasury for certain specified uses. Border security is not among those uses. So my legislation is very simple. It says El Chapo's assets,
right.
and for that matter, any other drug cartel, mm-hmm. whose assets are forfeited, their money would go to building the wall and keeping the border secure and keeping the country safe.
Brilliant. What a brilliant idea, huh? All right, here's your little bit of Rush Limbaugh. Begging Trump, shove this government shutdown garbage down every orifice of the Democrats.
In the case of this wall business, the only thing about it that bothers me, folks, is the government shutdown aspect. That's what I want to see. I want the Democrats shut down once and for all on this. I want them eating this, and I want all kinds of horrible tasting stuff on it when they swallow it. I want this government shutdown stuff rammed in every orifice of theirs, whether you can see it or not. And I want them to eat it, and I want them to chew it, and I want them to swallow it, and I don't want them to ever regurgitate it. I'm so sick and tired of this. It's one of the biggest lies. It is one of the biggest misrepresentations. It is one of the phoniest, baloneyest, plastic, but at a good time, rock and roller tricks that the Republicans have ever fallen for. It is government shutdown garbage. There is not a government shutdown. The government never totally shuts down. If it did, nobody would notice unless the media was out there whining and moaning about it. And it bugs me that people continue to cave for it. But the reason the Republicans cave is because they don't want the government shutdown either. The government is the establishment. The establishment is the government. You're asking them to shut themselves down. The Republicans know their role here. They get to stay in the establishment if they're the ones that eat it every day. Doesn't matter who wins elections, you can see. That's what bugs me. The clean out the swamp thing is what I was waiting for Trump to do. And part of cleaning out the swamp is getting rid of this tactic, one of many, government shutdown. And what I don't like about this is that we are delaying anything, wall, whatever it is, supposedly because of the fear that the Democrats will shut down the government and we will get blamed for it. If they're going to shut it down, let's find a way to blame them for it. Let's stop acting scared and fraidy cat stuff. I just warn them.
What if Trump offered to fund the border, the wall himself, and say he just wanted 5 or 10% interest on his money? The left would flip out. We've got a call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
This is Michael.
Michael, hey, how you doing? Good morning, and hope you're well. What's on your mind?
Well, we're commingling two concepts here, and it's been mentioned twice as the second concept. Border security is actually all we want, isn't it, Kelly?
Correct. I guess that's true, of course.
And so we have this thing we're looking at, the border wall, as if that will give border security. Actually, we have all the technology to make sure not even one kangaroo rat walks across that border without us knowing it. We have that technology.
All right, so tell people about the technology.
Well, I mean, yeah, because we can scan, we can see heat moving, all those kinds of things. But you know what I think we ought to do is build a 6-lane freeway from El Paso to San Diego about 50 foot high so that you can't scale over it. And then all that money would be useful for us, transportation, trucks, everything.
Very nice. What about the rest of from El Paso east?
Well, that freeway's a little harder to build because you got to build it on top of water. But I know for doggone sure we can go the other. But, you know, the other thing we're missing is the fact that we're not talking about what's at stake. There are 5 stakeholders that come across our border. One is, of course, people who came here to work. And, you know, you can have however you feel about it. I would prefer that they follow our traffic laws and our immigration laws and everything else. But you also have then your drug users, your terrorists, your human traffickers. But you also have people who would rather be thrown in jail in the United States than anywhere else. And so they come here knowing that when they're caught, they're going to come to a much better jail than, say, Panama or Mexico or Honduras or wherever it is.
All right. So, but are you saying that we should build an electronic wall?
We have it already. We have the blimps out there watching. We know that they're coming across. We didn't have the will to stop them. There is not 1 foot of that border we're not watching in some way. What's changed with Trump is he has the will to stop the people from coming across.
So we knew about every single person that crossed the border and did nothing.
I believe that's what has happened. I don't know that to be a fact, but we have the surveillance and you see those blimps out there. They're just monitoring heat patterns. So when a mountain lion goes across, they know that that's a mountain lion. They can see all that stuff.
Well, I'm going to have to verify this. It sounds interesting, but even if you've got all of this stuff in position, that doesn't actually stop people from crossing, does it?
No, you have to intercept them, and that's what we lacked was the will to go out and say, turn around. But the other thing is we lose 300 human beings on this planet a year out there in the desert. And that's a lick on us for having an attractive nuisance of a desert that they cross and then they die of thirst. I think that it's unconscionable that we let them start that journey.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, Mike, I got to take a break here, but thanks for the call and good point. Have a good weekend. All right, folks. So, well, but I mean, it still leaves me with the question, should we be building on the wall right now? Here's a little bit from Levin, and then we are going to take a break.
Hey, Republican Congress, I want you to listen to me. There's no excuse for this. There's no excuse for it whatsoever. There's no excuse for what Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell are doing or not doing. There's no excuse for the fact that the president doesn't yank them into the Oval Office and read them the riot act. I'm not talking about infrastructure, which they'll all support. I'm not talking about Bernie Sanders, Chuck Schumer, trade deals, which they'll all support. I'm talking about the budget. I'm talking about the priorities he ran on and the priorities that matter to us. Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, their predecessors and their successors do not have permanent control over the Treasury of the United States to reward their favorite constituent groups and donors and to redistribute wealth. And the only way to address this is the way that it was addressed during the presidency of President Ronald Reagan. And yes, be prepared to have a showdown. Be prepared to have a showdown and the competency and the articulation as a Republican Party that controls all the damn elected branches in Washington, D.C., to make the case to the American people that it is the despicable snake oil salesman, Chuck Schumer, and the despicable failure, Nancy Pelosi, who are destroying this economy, who are driving up the debt, and that we have a president who wants to do something about. We have a president who was elected to fund border security. It was always preposterous when he said that Mexico was going to do it. And I told you that. And I don't care about that. Build the damn wall. You got the House. You got the Senate. You got the presidency. You got the bureaucracy. The art of the deal. Screw the art of the deal. It should be the art of victory.
All right. So what do you think of that? Now, Mike Swickard calls in. We've got the technology. It's already in place. According to Mike's theory, all we need is more agents who are given direct orders to intercept everybody that comes over. And with the policy, I believe, that's in place, just throw them back over the border, which has not been, you know, I mean, what Obama didn't just lack the will. That's being much too kind. He took and hired a private security company with vans and buses. And when these people came across, he put them in these vehicles and he shipped them across to America. Why did he do that? Why would you send a whole bunch of foreigners to small towns that wouldn't necessarily have the infrastructure to be able to handle a large group of people, let alone a large group of foreigners? Because you're trying to break down the social fabric of the country town by town so that your theory of socialism can be established. We have another call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly. This is Aaron.
Aaron, hey. How's it going, man? What's on your mind?
Well, I really agree with Mr. Levine there on the radio in that when are the Republicans going to start acting like victors? Why do we have to kowtow? I heard Schumer on the radio on TV last night that he had a list of all these non-starters. But he lost. They're not in charge. When are we going to just make them take their medicine and do what we said we would do and get on with it and quit acting like, oh, my gosh, we're going to lose again if we do what Schumer wants, because he lost. His ideas and the Democratic Party's ideas lost. So I just wish we'd stop acting like we were the losers instead of the Democrats.
I hear you. I agree. Thanks for the call, Aaron. Have a great day. Folks, we'll take you I got to reboot my machine here, but I think these are good points. Don't act like you need to negotiate something that you have the power to do. Now, we just found out 0.7% growth in the economy, the lowest in 3 years. If we started building this wall right now, wouldn't that by definition create a rise in the GDP in the fortunes of these companies along the border? Just a thought. 721, we'll be back. 523-1450 and 805-6180. I really appreciate your calls, by the way.
It's coming. The hot weather is just around the corner, and 1 Hour Air of Sea has a heck of a deal for you. They'll install new air conditioning and solar panels on your home and finance it for just $33.23 a month. That's right, just $33.23 per month, and you'll still save money off your electric bill every month. So you get a new AC and furnace, a four-panel solar system, a Wi-Fi thermostat, and a reduced electric bill, and you only pay $33.23 a month. Sound too good to be true? Well, it's not. The 30% solar tax credit really brings the price down. Call 575-449-3277 or log on to 1hourairlc.com today and get the details. But act now, folks, because you'll want that air to start blowing cold soon. Installed air conditioning, a solar system, and reduced electric for just $33.23 a month. Now, that's cool. $99.95 finance, $33.23 a month for 18 months, then amortized. OAC. Price based on three-ton replacement AC and furnace plus four-panel standard solar installation. Price until the 3/8.
Imagine all the sleep you cost your mom through the years. As a crying baby, nightmares in grade school, and speaking of nightmares, let's not even talk about when you were a teenager. Hi, I'm Scott Hannon, founder of Bull & Branch, and I'm going to help you give your mom the gift she deserves, a great night's sleep with a set of Bull & Branch sheets. Our sheets are handcrafted from 100% organic cotton, the softest she'll ever feel, and they get softer over time. We only sell at BullandBranch.com, so you get twice the quality and half the price. No middleman markup. Everyone loves Bull & Branch, even three U.S. presidents. We guarantee she'll love them too. That's why your mom can try them risk-free for 30 nights. They arrive beautifully packaged in our signature gift box. No wrapping needed. Now through Mother's Day, we'll give you $50 off your first set of sheets when you go to BullandBranch.com and use promo code SLEEP. That's BullandBranch.com, spelled B-O-L-L, and Branch.com. Promo code SLEEP. That's BullandBranch.com, promo code SLEEP.
Sleep problems. We've all had them. Some toss and turn. Some complain of no support. That's enough to make you count sheets. That's why Serta redesigned the perfect sleeper. It helps solve not just one, but five common sleep problems. It's time to put your sleep problems to rest. It's time to experience comfort from the moment you lie down. The latest Serta Perfect Sleeper gives you five reasons to never count sheets again. Find your local Serta retailer on Serta.com. Serta. Always comfortable.
From work life to night, from home to the road, your day can take you anywhere. These fast-paced times offer regular advanced comfort. The Vantage Company is designed to keep up with you. Whether where you go or what you do, or make the 20-cent comfort set and slowly flex the challenge to the new
Bill Nye, science guy. He was a electrical or a mechanical engineer at Boeing, and then he got into comedy. He got into a couple of little TV shows. Now he's the face of science in the United States, and we'll get into him in just a second. We have another call. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connell Show is this.
That's Chuck. I'm going to kind of step back to something away from Bill Nye, going back to border security and illegal crossers. I was reading here in the paper a little while back that some farmers are really upset because if we cut down on illegal immigration, they won't have farm workers. Now, there was something years ago called the Bracero program, and it seemed to work very well. I don't know what happened to it. It died somehow, but it would allow Mexican workers to legally come across temporarily to work and then go back. And it was a pretty good program. It benefited Mexico, benefited the workers, benefited us, benefited the farmers. And something like that could work again. It was a very beneficial thing. It was efficient. It worked. And we didn't have the problems that we have now.
Was that called Prospera?
No, it was called the Bracero program.
Oh, Bracero.
I understand that means something like strong arm.
All right. Okay, I'm sorry, don't let me interrupt you, Chuck. By all means, go ahead.
I was thinking about that. It was quite some time back, but I don't see why something like that wouldn't work again.
Well, we'll have to look into it. Anything else?
No, sir, that's it.
Thanks, Chuck. Have a good one. All right, I've got a little info on Bracera here, but let me get this stuff on Bill Nye out of the way. All right, so Bill Nye, national science guy. What's his bona fides? What's his credentials? He worked at Boeing as a mechanical engineer. So, all right, so he's going around, and here's the thing. There was a connection that I was making yesterday, which was, or maybe it was the day before, when you talk about free speech, you've got to give free speech to the people that make you the most infuriated, because those are the people who need their free speech rights to be protected, and those people are the individuals who might change the country, the society for the better in the future. And we do have another call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Bob. Good morning, Kelly. I'm here to call. Wish you a very good weekend.
Bob, you got 30 seconds. 30 seconds. 30 seconds. You got 30 seconds.
Yes, sir. I care a lot for Michael Swigert and Alan Neumeier and these group of men. I was wondering if Michael Soles, do they still call you? And to comment about this border, when you bring these illegal aliens over, there's always going to be one out of the group that's going to have an illegal weapon. And then all of a sudden, if they don't, well, they're going to have drugs. And if they, and what then what happens is somebody's going to die. So I think we could think about the wall first. Once we get that down, then we can think about the freeway and then go from there. Okay, that's just, it has to be that way because we have ISIS. We have Al-Qaeda. That's what's happening.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks for the call. All right, so don't bring the illegals in because there's always a bad in the bunch that's going to ruin everything. All right, so just briefly, just bear with me here. I know you're very interested in the border. I'll get back to the border. We've got the Bracero as a topic here. But anyway, so this guy is getting up and he's lecturing people. And the connection between free speech and this is that these people want to shut down and prosecute. And some of them have even asked that people who deny global warming be imprisoned. So what you've got is an attack against free speech across the board. And what is proposed is that basically, a socialist set of beliefs is applied to human beings, and if a human being doesn't want to agree to that, you need to be reprogrammed, you need to be censured, you need to be sent out of society, lose your job, lose your connections, any power that you have, and ultimately, if you don't toe the line on global warming or any other million things that they'll come up with, then you need to be sent to prison. That's what these people stand for. Now, here is Bill Nye talking about three-year-olds being allowed to choose their own gender. Is this guy sick or what?
One thing's clear about sexuality. There's a lot more going on than meets the eye.
He's got some sort of a weird, he's got four figures illuminated. I think it's just a projection, but he's using to illustrate his gender bending points.
Female or male, gay or straight, pink or blue. We were taught to see these as binary. Now we're realizing it's more like a kaleidoscope. And this stuff isn't just for adults. Parents know this already. Kids explore gender expression, attraction before they've ever heard of a spectrum. Take sex. We used to think it was pretty straightforward. X and a Y chromosome for males, two X's for females. But we see more combinations than that in real life. And even for people with just two sex chromosomes, hormones can vary wildly. So can anatomy. What makes someone male or female isn't so clear cut. How about attraction? Some people argue the natural thing is to only be attracted to the opposite sex. But in practice, it ain't so simple, kids. Some people are gay. Some are bi. Some are asexual, and some will take whatever they can get. Know what I mean? It's another sexy sliding scale. When you throw in gender, it gets even more colorful. By three or four, most kids identify with a gender, and it doesn't always match the sex they were assigned at birth. And a person's gender identity may change over their lifetime. And culture is getting us new ways to express all of this. How you dress, how you act, talk, how you present yourself to the world, It should be up to you. Sure, this might make things confusing for those who insist everyone pick an M or an F. But people, we have to listen to the science. And the science says we're all on a spectrum. Our labels, our fashion, even our washrooms are still catching up to that truth. I think you'll find when we look at sexuality this way, it is more complicated, but it's also a lot more honest. And it's more interesting. I learned a lot tonight. I mean, I'm this cis male guy who's been living in this world. But this stuff, to me, from a scientific standpoint, is just cool. Science is the process by which we understand nature, by which we understand our place in the world, how we all fit in. And so every one of these insights is just so exciting for me. We, working together, can, dare I say it, save the world. So, everybody, that's our show.
I mean, what's the difference between what he just said in politics and where's the science in that? By the way, I'm just curious, since he stands for science and science alone. We'll come back and talk about this Bracero program a little bit. 7:33 a.m. Las Cruces Open Topic, 523-1450 and 805-6180 at your local news right here. By the way, this is the album that Dale Watson, who I played last Friday, his battle with Satan, promised God if he would save him, or as a result of being saved. So this is an album. It's called Help Your Lord, if you like the songs on it.
It was alone the Savior prayed in dark yesterday.
Jeff Bezos, owner of Amazon, $5 billion away from being the world's richest person. Amazon now worth more, twice as much as Walmart. It's inconceivable, isn't it? They had a problem in just making money a few years ago, and now his vision has paid off. Here's the Bracero program, Forgotten Voices. Is this the answer to getting workers over here? If we put up a wall.
4.8 million people came to the United States from Mexico under the Mexican Farm Labor Supply Program, more commonly known as the Bracero Program. Sadly, the experiences of those 4.8 million farm workers, as well as the millions that came before and after them, are not part of the narrative of American history that is told inside most American classrooms. This is their story. The story of the Bracero program is part of a larger history of American economic imperialism in Mexico, a process that began in earnest with the construction of a national railroad network in Mexico in 1877. As a result of this network, thousands of Mexican peasants were displaced from their land and left with little alternative but to seek work in El Norte. As a result, between 1890 and 1929, 1.5 million Mexicans migrated to the United States. The majority of them worked as agricultural laborers in the American Southwest. In spite of the harsh conditions of farm work, because of the simple fact that those who participated in the American economy were better off economically than those who didn't. American agribusinesses welcomed this influx of cheap and vulnerable laborers. In 1942, in response to the increased production demands of the American war effort, the Mexican Farm Labor Supply Program was enacted as a temporary program that would ensure a constant supply of cheap labor to U.S. agribusiness. Although informal migration from Mexico to the U.S. had existed since the end of the 19th century, this program formalized that migration. Early on in the program, the Mexican government expressed concern about the rights of its workers. In response, a series of informal amendments were passed between 1943 and 1947 that were intended to protect the rights of the workers. Ezequiel Padilla, Mexico's foreign secretary at the time, praised these amendments, declaring, "The agreements provide an opportunity to earn high wages and a noble adventure for our youth." This noble adventure, Padilla describes, began in processing centers in Mexico set up by the Mexican government. A quota system was used to determine the number of Mexican workers from each state in Mexico who could apply to work in the U.S. The process was competitive because there were so few viable jobs in Mexico. One former worker remembered how many of the applicants to the Bracero program were so poor that they were often forced to search for food in trash cans. Just like the generations before them, the prospect of employment in the North was only appealing because the economic situation in Mexico was so dire. Those who made it through the screening process in Mexico endured extensive physical examinations. Many men who were brought into the U.S. but ultimately not selected were left without any form of transport or aid for the journey back to Mexico. This system of imported labor relied upon a view of Mexican workers that saw them solely for their utility and ignored their humanity. Pablo Siqueiros, a farm worker in Brawley, California in 1960, described himself in an affidavit as an imported farm worker brought in by the Desert Growers Association. His detached and passive tone suggests an alienation from himself as well as the product of his labor. In the imaginations of the growers and the U.S. government.
Well, anyway, this is so leftist, it's hard to. But that's the basic idea. Here's a little bit more, which, it would be interesting if you could get some of this stuff, the information out of this without having this. This relentless leftism, and just give people the facts and you draw their own conclusion. Here's another call. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is David.
David, good morning.
The answer for the border. It's going to be just so freaking simple, but hear me out. Fort Bliss is a quick response area for our whole country, okay? On top of that, our economy stinks to high heaven down here. What we got going on is a whole bunch of empty land in between here, Lordsburg, all the way over to Tucson. Let's do this. Move Fort Bliss here. We're going to militarize the border as it is anyway. Oceanside, from all the way up to San Clemente is prime piece of property. We are going to bring this all.
Oh, wait a minute. How does moving Fort Bliss here, you mean to Las Cruces? What is? I know, but wait, hold on, Joe. Don't go off like a tea kettle now. So how does that solve the problem? How does moving Fort Bliss to Las money for who though?
Money for us. This whole economy here will just boom with all these people.
But what about all the people that want Fort Bliss to stay in El Paso for the same reason?
Of course it will. Fort Bliss will stay right there.
You're talking about growing Fort Bliss. You're like talking about expanding it from here to Lordsburg, from El Paso to Lordsburg?
We're going to militarize the border anyway. One way or another, we're going to do it. So why don't we just move them all over here?
But the border,
doesn't go
to Lordsburg. I don't understand the basis of your argument. You mean you want a supersize Fort Bliss is the answer to the border problems?
Well, we're going to do this anyway. We're militarizing the base of the border as it is now. So if we move Camp Pendleton over here, this will open up the whole area in California for development and boost our economy and also boost our economy here too.
All right. Okay. Thanks for the call. I don't really understand that, but perhaps I missed something. But anyway, all right, let's take a little break here for your weather. Thanks for the calls. They are appreciated, even if I don't understand some of the nuances. 523-1450 and 805-618-02 text. Thanks for the call, David, and we'll be right back.
Alone, he drained a bitter cup and suffered there for me.
Hey, it's Kelly.
Kelly,
at the morning. I didn't understand that either.
Little,
you have a good weekend.
You too. Thanks, Bill. All right, so supersize Fort Bliss all the way up to Lordsburg because it'll help our economy, which I have no doubt that it would, but wouldn't the government then own all the land between El Paso and Lordsburg? And how's that going to work out? Let me give you some, and we've got another phone call here, but let me give you some headlines when we come back. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is David, and I'd like to call one more time.
Briefly.
What I just said.
Briefly.
Hamilton.
Briefly.
Here.
You said Bliss.
Yeah. No, I understand. I'm it is a little nervous here, okay? Move Camp Pendleton here. This will be everything now. We need everything we got in the military.
All right.
We're doing it
question,
anyway.
Question. Doesn't if all right, let's just say you stretched a military base from El Paso to Lordsburg. Doesn't the government by default own the land between those two as part of the base?
I can go down there as it is now.
You're not answering my question, though. Wouldn't they own all the land? And what? How would that affect our economy if the government snapped everything up?
Well, for jobs. For jobs, it would happen over here. We could move this. We could start building again in Las Cruces. We could get rid of Mayor Fukushima in this area like this and make this into a growth area.
That's your best idea yet. Thanks for the call. Have a good weekend. All right. Mayor Fukushima is belching radioactivity everywhere it goes. Somebody needs to pull him aside. All right, so some headlines for you. Economy growth 0.7%, 3-year low. President addressing NRA after 100 days. Trump complaining Saudi's not paying fair share for defense, which has been going on for years, decades. The same is true for Europe. State Department plans 9% cut of diplomats, civil servants. Poll says media getting poor remarks or poor marks. Major conflict is possible with North Korea, as everybody knows. And Kim Jong-un, ready to send an army of up to 500,000 women soldiers to the front line. Oh, my gosh. And so they built a ski resort there. His dad or his grandfather went to Switzerland and was so impressed. They built a ski resort there in a very favorable place in North Korea, forgetting that it's very difficult to get in there. And also that there's really very few people in the country who can afford food and rent, let alone to go on an expensive ski journey. CIA implanted microphones into cats to spy. Your cat may be spying on you. I don't mean to alarm you. Now, droughts and tornadoes, hurricanes at record lows, Al Gore. And let's see what else here. Ridley Scott, aliens exist and will come for us. Frozen brains woken up and transplanted into donor bodies. Florida neighborhood covered in poop over majestic, as war erupts over majestic peacocks. My sister used to have peacocks. They're very loud. And let's see what else here. Mosquitoes have become the world's deadliest animals. And woman jailed following xylophone rage incident in her house. A man refused to stop playing the xylophone, so she came up and poured not hot but cold oil all over him, and he didn't appreciate it. They called the cops. MS-13 gang from Central America putting Long Island towns under a great deal of fear. And anything else here? Mexico to battle border with environmental lawsuits. Interesting. All right, we'll take our last break here. 523-1450 and 805-6180-2 text. Kelly O'Connell.
Alone, alone, alone.
Okay, a couple weird stories and then some comedy, and somebody asked for Jim Gaffigan. I'm trying to avoid doing all Gaffigan all the time, but he's funny and he doesn't cuss. I mean, it's kind of a rare quality. Woman arrested for xylophone rage attack. And this is, of course, I think this happened in Florida. Half of all weird things happen in Florida, I've noticed. For the first time ever, a defendant has been charged in connection with a xylophone rage incident, records show. According to investigators, Floridian April Encarnacion, 43, was collared earlier this month on a domestic battery charge after police responded to a residence in Fort Walton Beach. Encarnacion, cops say, was in the kitchen with a male victim who was, quote, playing a xylophone around 9:20 p.m. Encarnacion, apparently not enjoying the Friday evening musical offering, quote, asked him to stop, according to the court papers. And when he refused, Encarnacion did the only thing that made any sense to her at the time. As a response, she dumped a pot of cold cooking grease on him. Officers who responded to the 911 call noted the victim had wet spots on his shirt and shorts, and there appeared to be a puddle of liquid on the ground where the victim was sitting near the xylophone sobbing. I'm assuming he was sobbing. It's not in there, but I mean, if you're playing a xylophone and somebody poured a bunch of cold grease on you, what would you do? Now, Miss Encarnacion is jailed in lieu of a $3,000 bond, and she did confess to the attack, and she's an unemployed housekeeper who's already at her wit's end, and she was already sentenced in a 2015 no contest plea to a felony charge of battery on a police officer. Yeah, all right, so here's another one. A guy busted past, and this is from the Smoking Gun, these are actual court documents, busted past some firemen at his house, Dakota. What was he trying to save? He was out of his mind with grief. He pushed the fire people out of the way and went in his house to save his beer. Do not get in the way of that one. Now, a multiple ISIS fighters mauled and killed by an unlikely wild animal, wild boars, in Iraq. And Kirkuk, and so, and the ISIS fighters are not taking this sitting down. They're going back for revenge. They're going to give a little bit of Allah's justice to these wild critters. And let's see. All right, so I've got enough time for Waffle House, which I may have done before, but Waffle House is a heck of a piece here by Jim Gaffigan.
I went to Waffle House last night. Tell you, I thought the IHOP was a dump until I went into a Waffle House. Wow, they're not even trying in there. Here's something you'll never hear in a Waffle House. Nice job cleaning up. Now, if you've never been to a Waffle House, just imagine a gas station bathroom that sells waffles. And you've been to a Waffle House. I love Waffle House. And not just because watching someone fry an egg while they're smoking reminds me of my dad. The people in there, it's like a white trash convention. Or for me, a family reunion. It's so white trash in there, it makes the IHOP appear international. I've seen a gun 5 times in my life. 3 of them have been in Waffle House. It's definitely a dangerous feel to them. You know, even the Waffle House sign looks like a ransom note. There's always a letter out. Occasionally it'll be the W, so it'll read Awful House. That's where I want to go at 2 a.m. That's when everyone goes. Their slogan should be, it's 2 a.m., still time to make one more bad decision. You go in there, everyone's drunk. You know everyone's drunk in Waffle House because they have pictures of the food on the menu. How drunk do you have to be to not remember what a waffle looks like? Oh, yeah, it's like a plaid pancake. I'll have 12 of those for a nickel. You ever go to Waffle House during the day? That's weird. This place looks familiar. I think I threw up in here. Oh, there it is.
All right, Jim. Can't disagree with Jim Gaffigan. All right, so we were talking today about North Korea. What do you think? Are we going to have a war? And I don't know. I would guess, just my guess, that we're not going to go to war with these people. But who knows? What if Trump sends a whole bunch of missiles into the Kim Jong-un's bathroom window as just a little reminder of who's in charge? Now, looking for anything else I might have lost here. Shock, two teachers arrested for having sex with the same student. I got to ask you, we got to do a show on this. Why are all of these relatively attractive, middle-aged or 20s to 30s, 40s, sometimes 50s women who are already married and have kids and are teachers having sex with their male students? What has changed in the culture? Now, all right, so now I'm looking at this OCOE, OCOE, high school teachers had sexual relation with student, same student. It's two guys this time. So, but what has happened in the culture that so many women, so many female teachers are having affairs with their kids? There's something is a little bit off. Well, anyway, thanks for tuning in. Hope you have a great weekend. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces. We'll meet you back in a couple of days. Ciao.
Alone, the Savior stood in Pilate's judgment hall. And alone, the crown of thorns